From its origin to its termination at the mouth or the delta, the Moldau River, musically painted by Bedrich Smetana, from a larger work, Mav Lost, My Country, a place he loved very much. We heard the Detroit Symphony, led by Nema Yerva.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn at Henry Ford Community College. WHFR, funded, of course, through Henry Ford Community College and through listener support like yours. We are just approaching the exciting 1 week out of the year where we host our annual pledge drive. It's called Radiothon 2009, and that will take place the week of April 19th through the 25th, an opportunity for you to give back, as it were, to the great programming that you so consistently get to hear here on WHFR. We're so proud to play it, but we just can't do it without your support. About 60%, 60% of our WHFR operating budget comes from listeners like you. And again, this is the time that we will be asking for your pledge of support, your financial commitment to keep things going here at WHFR. So again, think about that. We'll be asking for your support during Radiothon, which is right around the corner. Thanks.
Welcome to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morell, and Pet Lovers Lane is a news, information, and talk show about pets for pet lovers and for pets. And today, for our April show, we have two very, very special guests right here with us in the studio at WHFR from Leader Dogs for the Blind. And I have to correct myself. We have four special guests in the studio because we have Melissa Weiss, who is the Chief Philanthropy Officer. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And we have Debbie Kamundi, who is the team supervisor and trainer. Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you.
And also we have Harbor, who is a trainee dog, and we have Granger, who is a retiree dog, and they are all part of this wonderful, wonderful program right here in the great state of Michigan. So tell us, Melissa,
yes,
a little bit of background about Leader Dogs for the Blind.
Well, firstly, thank you so very much for having us here today. As you'll see, speaking to Debbie and I, Leader Dog is full of passionate people and passionate dogs, and we're always so appreciative of a chance to speak about our work and make our mission more known to the public at large. So thank you very much for having us.
Yes, you're welcome. I'm so glad you made it and got past the road work here on Evergreen Road.
Well, we had Leader Dogs with us, so we can make it anywhere with that.
Exactly.
Leader Dogs for the Blind is a real bright spot and a true gem, not only in Metro Detroit, but nationally. We're a 70-year-old organization that serves people who are blind all over the United States and all over the world. We're located physically in Rochester, but our reach extends so far with so many paws, so many wet noses, so many teams working together to establish greater independence and mobility for people who are blind and visually impaired. So we've been based in Rochester for 70 years, founded initially by the wonderful Lions Club's members who support us to this day. They're our largest single constituency base. Three members of Lions Clubs in the Metro Detroit area were looking to send a friend of theirs who was blind or visually impaired to learn how to work with a dog guide. He was looking for a place in one of the schools in another part of the country, couldn't find a place, so these three Lions set about forming Leader Dog. And from that day, 70 years ago, to today, we've grown into an organization that has 120 employees, a huge campus with a veterinary clinic, a chirogenic facility, a residence dormitory, really a state-of-the-art facility for people who are blind and visually impaired. And what's so very special about that story is that we are powered 100% by philanthropy. All of our donations are from individuals and people. No government support, no federal support, no United Way support. Completely philanthropy. So we're talking about a $10 million budget that comes from the goodness and generosity of people's hearts.
That's a very large budget.
Yes, it is.
And so you're encompassing the whole United States, and you actually started here right in Michigan. Is that correct?
That's right. And not only the United States, we serve people, and Debbie, you can add in here as well, in Argentina, Brazil, all over Spain, South America. We have someone here from Israel at the moment. Students from all over the world who right now as we speak are navigating market towns in northern Chile, rural communities in Nebraska, downtown Manhattan. All of those dogs are working locations as vastly different as that.
Can you imagine that these dogs go all over the world? Why? Because there is a need.
Absolutely.
There is a need. Demand for their service.
Yes. There is a demand for their service. And when you support Leader Dogs for the Blind, you're instantly having an impact upon someone's life. People who are blind come to us and stay with us for 26 days, and people as highly trained as Debbie provide them with a perfect match and a canine companion who will help guide them and navigate their home communities. So we're instantly able to improve someone's life, and we do that through the donations from the general public that are so the lifeblood of our work.
Well, this is wonderful. Well, Debbie, tell us a little bit about your background. You are a dog trainer, and that's a feat in itself. That's a great creative talent, I believe, for someone to be able to train these dogs to have these kind of extraordinary abilities.
Yes. I not only train the dogs, I train the people that are going to use the dogs, and I also train people that are going to become trainers. So I have a multifaceted job, as do many people at Leader Dog. We graduate approximately 250 to 300 teams a year. We have a staff of 24 trainers, some of whom are apprentices. To become a trainer, you have to go through a three-year apprenticeship, and that is on-the-job training apprenticeship. So you start out right away training the dogs.
But how did you yourself become a trainer? That's what I'm very curious about. Of course, you're a pet lover, and we have to hear that story of how you both became pet lovers. So start off there.
Okay. I started out, I didn't join the workforce until my children grew up. So it was later on in life, but I started out working in the dog care department because we have an department that all they do is take care of all the dogs that are there. And eventually I found out that I was pretty well qualified through experience and ambition to become a dog trainer. And so I decided when they needed a new instructor, I decided to apply for the apprenticeship, and I received it right away. The three-year apprenticeship went very well. I've always loved animals. I originally started out wanting to be a veterinarian. And in my job now, I get to work really close with a veterinarian. So I'm very satisfied in that respect. I also like helping people to help themselves. And that is the main goal of my job now, is to teach people to help themselves and to gain greater independence with a leader dog.
But you must have some type of extraordinary ability to be able to communicate with these dogs. I don't think everyone has that.
No, I agree with you on that. Yes, it does take a special person to be able to understand dogs and to know the psychology of dogs and just to be able to look at them and kind of think that you know that you understand what they're thinking. And I am one of those individuals that can do that. It doesn't take me too long to get to know a dog, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and I can probably tell you a good part of the personality of the dog.
And I'm just guessing, but tell me if I'm correct. I think that people who can train pets and work very closely with pets have very good ability to pick up body language.
Yes.
Of people and of animals. Am I right?
Yes, that's very true. And so, we use a lot of body language in our training, especially since the client themselves can't see body language, right, but they can feel what the dog is doing.
Right.
And we teach them to do that.
So there's a body language, and I think there's also an emotional language of animals, because they can't talk.
Yes. Yep, that's very true.
And so you kind of are able to tune into those things that the pets are trying to tell us.
Yes, and dogs are very expressive with their eyes. You know, you get a lot of what they're doing from their eyes, but you do see things from their body too. For instance, not every dog that wags its tail is happy.
I've heard that. So what else can it mean?
Sometimes it means that they're nervous.
Oh.
You know, they're worried about an introduction or something like that, or there's an unusual situation around. And sometimes it's just an attention-getting thing.
Oh, I see. So it can be anxiety.
Yes, yes.
Anxiety from the dog. So you have to really realize. I never realized that.
Yeah.
That dogs have anxiety just like people, right?
Oh, yeah. Especially going into new situations and things like that. With our dogs, most of our dogs come from our puppy raising program, and the dogs have been socialized into being indoors in situations like the grocery store, the bank, things like that, where a personal pet hasn't been socialized like that because they're not usually allowed in those places.
This is true.
And when we take a dog that hasn't been socialized like that, we have to start at the beginning and get them to be comfortable in those situations.
Because
right. A lot of times they're not comfortable in them.
Well, who can blame them?
Yes.
Who can blame them? Everybody's out shopping and right. Spending money. But Melissa, let me find out from you how you became a pet lover.
Well, I've always, probably much like Debbie, grown up with animals. Actually, before I came to Leader Dogs for the Blind, I was working for an auction house in London, Christie's, and I worked increasingly with nonprofits and especially museums. And one of the big things we sold was animal-related and dog-related pictures. And you'd have a whole bevy or a clientele of people passionate about animals. I loved the nonprofit work I was doing and really wanted to be engaged in a nonprofit, and came to Leader Dog and absolutely fell in love with the mission here. We have so many dedicated people. It's an extraordinary place to work, an extraordinary team of people. And really, it's such an organization that anyone who visits our campus in Rochester is so surprised by the breadth and scope of our work. To see people who work in our dog care area that mind and take care of these dogs whilst they're with us in training, the passion is so evident, from our puppy raisers to dog care and training. It's a palpable feeling of mission at our organization.
And I do detect a little bit of an accent there, and tell me and our audience where you're from.
Actually, I'm from London. I moved here 5 years ago. As you know, the British are great dog lovers.
Right,
one sends one's children to boarding school, but keeps the dogs at home.
Now, is this your dog? Is Granger
yes,
your dog?
Yes, I raised a puppy. I was a Leader Dog puppy raiser 2 years ago and raised a yellow lab who's now a working dog guide in Madrid in Spain. And when she went back to Leader Dog for formal training, I adopted Granger, who was just coming back, having guided someone in Canada for 3 years.
Okay, so Granger is, you tell me, a retiree?
That's right.
So he's been in the program?
Yes, he was raised by a Leader Dog puppy raiser. He comes from our breeding stock. We have a breeding colony of dogs because we're breeding for traits that would make a perfect service dog, specific Leader Dog traits, though we are very proud of the fact that we also utilize dogs from humane societies and shelters, one, I believe the only school in the country to do so. So, but Granger here comes from our breeding stock colony. He had a Leader Dog mom and dad who live with volunteers. He was raised by a puppy raiser in Illinois, came back to Leader Dog for his formal training, which he passed with flying colors. He worked with Debbie as well, and he was sent out to Canada to work in the field, where he guided a gentleman there for 3 years. And this gentleman was no longer able to work with the Leader Dog, so Granger came home. And instead of being sent out in the field again, he because of his age, I adopted him. So he comes with me everywhere.
And he's, tell us what kind of dog.
Granger is a beautiful, I must say, very debonair yellow lab. Very good-looking bloke.
And he's how old now?
He's 6 years old now.
So 6 years old, is that considered to be a retiree?
No, that is that is quite young. A typical working life for us is perhaps between 8, 9, 10 years is getting on there a bit. But this is a challenge for us that Debbie can speak about. The relationship between a dog guide user and the dog guide is so profound. Often people wait too long to make the decision to come back for a new dog. It's a powerful partnership that one establishes, so much so that we have a grief counseling program, a transition program at Leader Dog to address that. So typically we're looking at dogs coming back around 8 or 9 years old. They have several options when they do come back. If a graduate is able, a Leader Dog graduate who's blind, could keep the dog with a family member, especially when they're coming back to get a new dog. Or we ask the puppy raiser who raised the dog, would you like the dog back in retirement? We also have a career change program. When a dog has been through career change, they're adopted out to the general public. So we have many, many benevolent people that provide homes for leader dogs in their old age.
I love that career change program for the dog. This is great. You are listening to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morrell, and today we are talking with Melissa Weiss, who is Chief of Philanthropy, and she's the chief officer at Leader Dogs for the Blind. And also joining us today is Debbie Kamande. She is a team supervisor and dog trainer. And we also have her dog, Harbor, is here with us today. He's a trainee. And what kind of a dog is Harbor?
Harbor's a female golden retriever, and she's 15 months old. She's just started her training program 2 weeks ago.
Oh, my gosh. And I can see that she wants to talk. She wants to say something.
Yes.
Do we want her to speak on the air here? Oh, no.
No, we try to teach them not to bark as much as dogs do.
Okay. All right. We know she's here and we love her, and they're both such incredibly beautiful dogs. And my understanding is that you also train German Shepherds. Is that true?
Yes. We train German Shepherds, Golden Retrievers, Labrador Retrievers. And we'll also take mixed breeds within those breeds. We have had in our program some standard poodles for people that have allergies. A standard poodle is less allergenic than a golden retriever, say. We've trained some smooth coat collies, too, which seem to make really good guides as well.
Well, I think, I don't know about you, but I think I have pet allergies myself, but I'm not giving up my kitty cats or being around puppy dogs either because I love them too much. So
right.
If my eyes water, my nose runs, pardon moi.
Yes, I feel the same way.
It's the best I can do.
Yes.
So excuse me, folks, our WHFR loyal listeners. Sometimes these things happen on the air. You know, we have puppy dogs in the studio. So we're very, very thankful that they could all come in person today and be here with us on the beautiful campus of Henry Ford Community College. And they built this beautiful studio for us. So, you know, we really appreciate it. And I know that you have a fabulous complex out there in Rochester. You've enumerated some of the things that you do out there. And just tell us a little bit more about the complex, how big and fabulous it is.
It actually is a campus that encompasses quite a lot of different things that we've only just begun to touch on with you. So we're looking forward to telling you about some of our technology initiatives as well. Well, we do have a state-of-the-art kennel facility that houses up to 300 dogs at any given time. We obviously have to maintain an inventory of dogs to be able to cope with the demands of graduating 270 dog guide teams a year. So we want to have puppies in training, puppies in the various stages of training to become a dog guide, as well as puppies being raised in the field. We have 400 puppy raisers off campus that are raising future leader dogs for the blind for us. So
okay, so let's just tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you. What is your contact information? If they're interested in being a puppy raiser, how can they become involved?
If you're interested in becoming a puppy raiser, please do visit our website, www.leaderdog.org. There you'll be able to find brilliant information on what a fabulous year of life you will have raising a leader dog puppy. Debbie and I were saying earlier, the whole world greets you with a smile when you have a leader dog puppy with you. We provide you with little capes, sort of designate your raising a future leader dog for the blind, and we ask our volunteers to go out and forth into the world exposing these young puppies to anything a blind or visually impaired person might come across in life.
If you take on a puppy, the puppy would be how old?
The puppy would be about 7 or 8 weeks old, and you would keep it until it was probably about 12 or 13 months old. We have guidelines for you to follow when you're raising a puppy. We're always available for you if you have any questions, but it is a voluntary thing that you do, and you are responsible for any like vet bills and things like that that the puppy could incur, which
in other
are
words,
normal.
Yeah, you have to feed the dog.
Yes,
you have to
exactly.
Give it water. You have to
Absolutely.
Be able to entertain the dog mm-hmm. and take it outdoors for
right.
a little walk and a little break. And
yep.
What about house training?
House training is a must, but we also request that you relieve the dog on leash because that's what we do once the person gets their dog. They always relieve it on leash so that they know what it's doing. And to not take it for a walk while when you're relieving it, because when a blind person uses one of our dogs, they're walking with the dog all the time on the sidewalk.
Right.
And we don't want them to have to stop and, you know, let the dog relieve. Instead, we relieve beforehand and always on leash.
Okay. So it's a little step-by-step process.
Yes,
and you have
is.
Procedures. Now, what about, is a puppy trainer allowed to have other pets in the household?
Oh, yes, definitely. Because all of our clients have other pets, too.
What about kitty cats?
No problem. We actually have two cats that live at our kennel.
Very good.
They have a very large area to roam, and they have litter boxes, and they're fed by the dog care staff and things like that. But the cats are there, you know, for our comfort, but they're there to also teach the leader dogs not to be distracted by cats. So they just, you know, it's just something walking down the street. It's nothing, no big deal for them.
Well, I always talk about, I shouldn't say my number one cat at home because she hears this, she'll think I'm playing favorites. But I did tell her this morning she was my number one. But her name is Mitzi, and I adopted her from the Dearborn Animal Shelter.
Wonderful.
Unfortunately, we had some major challenges with her because she was a kitten when we adopted her, and she became very ill, and she had food poisoning for the first quite a few weeks, couple months. So she had major problems, but I have to say she's the most extroverted cat I've ever met. I mean, she is just, I thought she was a little karate cat when she first got home. And those are the kind of moves that she had. Where do you see a cat like this that has all these karate moves? I mean, just a kitten. Oh. Where did she learn these things? So anyway, that's kind of her story. And I had to train her myself. So I had to go through the school of hard knocks with
yes.
Mitzi, which took really about 2 years. Mm. She's just a very energetic, extroverted type cat. Now, would your dogs adapt to a cat like that?
Yes. They're pretty adaptable, these dogs are. We expose them to any kind of a situation that you can imagine, and some that you can't even imagine.
That's absolutely right, what Debbie is saying. And as a puppy raiser, we ask our puppy raisers to come to class at Leader Dog, and starting from a very early age, we challenge the dogs with multiple distractions. Things as simple as blowing bubbles, asking them to walk through ladder-type steps when a ladder is laid out on the ground, changing puppy raisers so that they're walking with a different raiser, just anything that's challenging and different, calling the dog to come down a dark hallway. These sorts of things help the dog as it realizes different and new environments. One of the things we did as puppy raisers was go to a fire station, and we have the firemen talk through their masks to the puppies so that if ever they encounter that out in the field with a person who's blind, they will have experienced that.
That is the nature of reality. And
yes.
Unfortunately, strange things happen.
That's
at times
right.
In real life, when you're at home, the phone rings, you have music going, you have the radio going, you have people come to the house to visit, you have all kinds of things that happen, especially if you have children and pets, and you have thunder and lightning and storms, and these things are the
That's
things
right.
that affect pets.
Absolutely. And big dramatic things as well. A story we like to talk about is after the hurricane in New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina, one of our graduates was there with his leader dog, who was a resident of the city. He didn't really have a family. He lived on his own with his dog guide. And when the National Guard came to evacuate his community, he was not permitted to take his dog guide with him. So he was taken to Texas.
Oh, that's terrible. That is terrible.
The dog actually waited for him in this waterlogged home.
Oh.
I think it was for over a week.
Oh, my God.
Until the National Guard came back to reunite the two. And actually, it was such a spectacular story. They were reunited on the Today Show in Manhattan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that.
And to see this dog reunited with his dog guide owner was fabulous.
Well, it's a miracle that the dog survived for a whole week. I mean, did the dog have food?
He just made it. I don't think he had any food, as many of the dogs down there didn't at that time.
That was a terrible thing we went through as pet lovers, people lovers and pet lovers. It was a tragedy for the country. Here on Pet Lovers Lane, we had several of the people who actually went down in person and provided rescue and brought animals back with them. And, you know, the stories, the horror stories they have to tell is just, you know, heartbreaking. Of course, we watched it all 24/7, you know, those of us who weren't able to go. But our hearts were there. We sent our donations there with them. So, and that gets back to the fundraising issue. So let's go back there a little bit and tell us a little bit more about fundraising and how important it is to the organization.
It is critical for our operation. As I mentioned earlier in our conversation, we don't receive any federal or state funding. So we rely solely upon the generosity of benevolent individuals, people that care both passionately about animals and passionately about people who are blind and visually impaired. So truly for us, every gift is significant, whether it's $5, $5,000. Everything is a true gift of meaning to Leader Dog. Our operating budget is approximately $10 million a year. Our economic engine comes from wills and bequests, people that remember and think of Leader Dog in their will. Maybe they've met a Leader Dog graduate, perhaps they've met a lion, and they've sought to make us the ultimate gift by remembering us at that time. We're also supported by Lions, as I mentioned earlier. Lions clubs throughout the country and the world do raise money on our behalf. We receive money from generous corporations through the form of grants, and then, of course, through individuals. We also take a 5% draw from our endowment for our general operating budget. So every year it's a challenge, and no year more than this year for us. And yet, whilst we know optimistically the economy will turn around, the people that we serve will still be blind. So our need is so great. People who are blind and visually impaired face tremendous obstacles to joining the workforce, very, very unjustly so. So our service, our program, provides them with this essential companion in the form of a dog guide to go out in the world, be a part of life, be a part of their communities. And whether for them that's simply getting to the mailbox or navigating between Buenos Aires and Madrid, because we have graduates that do that, success means many different things for us. And we want to be there for all those people, whether they're someone who's blind, who's raising a family in rural Nebraska, to someone who is a working businessman at Northrop Grumman in Virginia. It's our obligation to be there for people. So I can't say to you enough, to the listeners of this wonderful show, Pet Lovers Lane, that we need you, we need your support this year more than ever to help people who are blind and visually impaired and put those four paws and a wet nose and a strong harness in their hands so that they can do everything they want to do in life.
So if people are interested in donating or even being a volunteer, they should what? Go to your website?
Absolutely. Visit our website, www.leaderdog.org. We have a fabulous volunteer program where you can come and actually walk our dogs. We love to socialize our dogs and get them out. You'll find out all about donation options there as well. There are many, many ways to give and support Leader Dog. We have a fabulous publication, The Leader Dog Update, that you can read online. Read wonderful stories about our graduates around the world and what they're accomplishing. I think Debbie and I are fortunate to work some place where every day we're reminded just how fortunate we are. We have a very, very unique program that we haven't spoke of yet called our Deaf and Blind Program, which is for people who have mostly degenerative diseases that cause one to lose your hearing and sight progressively. We have dedicated instructors in our deafblind program who communicate through tactile American Sign Language into the hands of people who are deaf and blind. So a very dedicated one-on-one program. So much like in the style of Helen Keller, one is signing into the palm of someone's hand. And we are training our leader dogs, dogs like Harbor and Granger, to take commands in American Sign Language.
Oh, this is fantastic.
So this is a wonderful, wonderful aspect of our program, and we're very proud of the graduates of this program. We have one lady I'm thinking of in, specifically, works on Capitol Hill. She came to us, has Usher syndrome, and went on to get her master's degree from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. And when you look at her Harvard picture, amongst all the caps and gowns, there's her leader dog right by her side.
And she's blind.
And she's blind, yes.
Oh, how wonderful.
So that's the kind of story. That's why what we do is so important. And what makes it perhaps even more critical is that if we can reach someone early in life, if they're a teenager, and we can tell them, from here on out, you have a leader dog beside you, you can go to Harvard, you can go to Madrid, you can go to Manhattan, there's nothing you can't do. It's a very important message, something we believe in strongly at Leader Dog.
Well, it is miraculous that blind people can get out and do the things that everybody else does and have a normal life. I think that we all, since none of us have a disability, we take things for granted. You can't imagine getting through a day without sight, because it would be very hard for me even to navigate in my own home. Thank the Lord for these wonderful dogs and for what you're doing at Leader Dogs for the Blind and this fabulous program that goes all over the world. And
absolutely.
And anyone who's listening can participate, even if you're listening to WHFR, WHFR.FM online. You can listen anywhere in the world. You can still go to the website and give your website again and
www.leaderdog.org. We'd love for you to visit, have a look at what we offer on our website, and please know that everyone that comes to our facility, if you're blind and visually impaired, it is of no cost to the recipient of a dog guide. We pay for your travel, your 26-day stay at Leader Dog, your room and board, the harness, the dog, everything that goes with it. It's completely free of charge. That's what your donation is covering, putting that very powerful companion in the hands of someone who's blind.
Well, I mean, this is truly a miracle. You know, what you're doing every day, it's a real-life miracle in your hands. We are so thankful to what you're doing and, of course, to the wonderful dogs. Tell us, Debbie, a little bit more about the training and a little bit more about your facilities and what they provide for training for people, for animals, a little bit more about how that process goes along.
Okay. The dogs are trained for 4 months, and then the fifth month is spent at the residence with the person that's going to be receiving the dog. They're getting one-on-one training and group training for that 26 days, because there's a lot more into using a dog guide than just having a pet. We teach the student all about taking care of a dog, how important it is to get it to the veterinarian, what kind of food to use and why, and even right down to how to act in the public, because you are in the public eye a lot more than you would be if you were just walking with a cane or something like that. But we start out training the dogs when they're approximately 12 to 14 months old. 4 month training program is in 4 phases. At the beginning phase, phase one, we teach them, mostly we're evaluating them and trying to see if they are going to make a good leader dog. There, obviously, there's requirements, and one of them has to be that the dog is friendly with every stranger it meets, but not overly friendly. It has to basically ignore other animals, squirrels, cats, anything like that, other dogs, and it has to be able to really focus on the person that it's with. We can usually determine that in the first month while we're starting to train them the basic commands, which is sit, down, stay, and we also use a command forward to get the dog to start out.
So the dogs have to have a certain temperament.
Yes, it's definitely got to have a certain temperament for that. They really need to be able to listen to what we tell them. And this is where being able to read a dog, to understand what
right.
a dog is thinking, comes into play when you're starting to train them, because Eventually you start to think alike, the dog and the person, especially the blind person that the dog's going to be living the rest of its life with.
Right.
They quite literally end up, they can go someplace and the dog will take them there without being given any instruction, where at the beginning the dogs have to have instruction in order to learn where they're going and things like that.
Well, the dog becomes their best friend.
Yes, it does.
So just give us a few examples of what are some of the things that the leader dogs help their blind partners to do in life that they would not be able to do without the dog.
Okay. Well, first of all, one of the main things that we teach the dog is to stop at a curb so it doesn't walk it right directly into the street. And then one of the things that we are very strong in teaching the dogs is not to step in front of a moving vehicle.
That's very important.
Yes, it is. Even if it's given the command to go ahead, if there's a moving vehicle, the dog should stop. And we have to teach that because any dog will, you know, dogs get hit by a car all the time.
Exactly.
They have no concept of that's a dangerous thing. So we have to teach them that it's dangerous. And you'll see us in downtown Rochester teaching the dogs to stop for a moving vehicle by showing them that's a bad thing. You've got to be careful. It just takes a few tries, and the dog starts to understand that, and we keep reinforcing it throughout training so that they know. Because myself, I've almost been hit several times just out training the dog, and I'm sighted, so.
Right, there you go.
Yes.
So what are some of the things, for example, around a person's house, around a person's office, if they were working, what would the dog do?
Well, in the house, the dog doesn't usually wear the harness, and the harness is what is used to guide. In the house itself, it's not usually an issue, but in the office, it would take you, you know the way to the bathroom, so
okay.
to speak.
So okay? The way to the bathroom.
Yes, the dog, you could have the dog guide you to the bathroom.
And the dog would do that at home, too? The dog does that at home?
No. In your own home, people know their own home.
They know
their home.
They
don't need a dog for that.
Okay.
You don't need a dog to take care of you inside your own home.
Okay.
But outside,
right.
You know, it's a big world out there, and you need a dog to avoid obstacles.
Okay.
You know, you're walking down the street and there's a flower planter here and a park bench here and a light pole here. And the dog will take you around those without ever making any contact, where, you know, if you were not sighted and you were walking with your cane or something, you might make contact with the pole. In fact, you have to make contact with the pole or whatever so that you know that it's there so you won't run into it.
True.
The dog will avoid all of those obstacles, so you feel like you're walking a clear path. You have no idea that there's any obstacles there.
Very good. You are listening to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I am Susan Morrell, and with me today in the studio from Leader Dogs for the Blind is Melissa Weiss, the Chief Philanthropy Officer, and also Debbie Kamandi, who we've just been listening to, and she is a dog trainer and also a team supervisor, and their two little puppy dogs are here. They're not so little. Harbor is a trainee dog, and Granger is a retiree, and Granger is a lab, and Harbor is a golden retriever, and they're beautiful, beautiful dogs. If you get involved in the trainer dog volunteer trainer program, you can also train or house a dog, a grown dog. Is that true?
We have several options if you're interested in working with the dogs as a volunteer. One, you could be a leader dog puppy raiser, as we spoke of earlier. You could have a breeding stock dog in your home, which would mean whelping as well, and having that tiny litter in your home for the first few weeks. Also, you could adopt a retired leader dog. So many, many options for you if you'd like to come.
Okay, so what would be the requirements for someone to do that? I mean, I know they have to take care of the dog, but what are you looking for? Do you have an application process?
Do have an application process to be a leader dog puppy raiser, and you should find that application on our website at www.leaderdog.org. There you'll also find our expectations for working with a small future leader dog hero to guide him in his journey towards becoming a working leader dog. We actually have a manual we give you, and we're asking leader dog puppy raisers to teach dogs the very basic commands in those that critical first year of life. it's a big job because they're very young dogs, and frankly, we could not do it at Leader Dog without our puppy raisers. If we had to house all of those exuberant young dogs during that first year of life, our job would be almost impossible. So it's just absolute and complete dedication. Debbie and I were marveling on the way here that we have so many repeat puppy raisers, people who've raised multiple dogs, 30 and 40 dogs for our program. It's really a lifetime of service. And these people are so benevolent and so giving. They know at the end of the year they're giving the dog back, and the dog is going on to do many things. It's very bittersweet, very bittersweet, very beautiful.
Well, I imagine it would be, but I can imagine the time and energy it would take, because as I mentioned, it took me good 2 years to work on Mitzi, and believe me, it was really, I had to really dedicate myself, because actually, my husband and I had fights over Mitzi. get rid of that cat. And, you know, we go back and forth. She did this, she did that. I'm getting rid of the cat. I mean, we actually fought about it. Neither one of us had the heart to do it because, you know, Mitzi is just a very mischievous, curious kitty cat. And she has just this energy level that's so far above anybody else's around that nobody could keep up with her. And so I really had a challenge with her. But now she's older. She's about 5 years old now. And she's really calmed down and she's mellowed out. And she's, you know, but I'm saying that little persona has not gone away. Don't forget about that.
Well, it's a bit like a leader dog. That first month of life, you know, Labrador and Golden Retriever puppies are extremely exuberant and they do settle down later in life. But the puppy stage is a challenging one. So we really are looking for people who are committed to preparing the dog for this essential task. We spoke about safety earlier, and it is... They're guiding, it's life or death. You're guiding through traffic. And as Debbie said, it's a big world out there. We want people who are committed to the ultimate purpose of what we're doing. And as I mentioned, we just couldn't do it without our puppy raisers. So to any puppy raisers in the Pet Lovers Lane community, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We do appreciate you and value you every day at Leader Dog.
I'm sure. Well, maybe I can be a puppy raiser someday. Tell us a few success stories before we wrap up the show here. What are some of the great success stories you've had with the people or the animals or whatever the case may be?
Before we mention a success story, may I just say one thing to you that I think is really critical. Your listenership knows, being pet lovers, that when we select dogs for our work, when we raise puppies for our work, if a dog is not suited to be a leader dog, they're never pressed into the work. You want a dog that has a natural aptitude and joy for it, which is why we have a career change program to prompt a dog towards a different career. So if you do visit us at Leader Dog, you see joyful dogs that are very challenged and engaged by the work. Dogs are so smart. They relish the challenge for our puppy raisers and for the community that does see working leader dogs. You do see a spring in their step. They love the challenge and love the work, which leads to our success stories out in the field, which are manyfold. Leader Dog is a wonderful place of tales and stories. I was speaking to a graduate recently in Wisconsin, and he was preparing to leave on what was a really routine route for him with his yellow lab dog guide, and got out the door, made a few steps. The dog just stopped and refused to navigate further. He couldn't understand what was wrong. Dog turned around and wanted to go back home. This chap's neighbor said to him, "You know, it's so foggy out, you cannot see anything. You can't see where you're going." And this dog just stopped. He couldn't see, knew it wasn't safe to take Len out there, so stopped. And I think that's that intelligent disobedience that we're teaching our dogs.
And this is where did this
Wisconsin.
Happen?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Yes.
It didn't happen in the foggy city of
yes.
London. I heard it's legendary about the foggy city of London, right?
It is, and it is. It's and something to watch for, navigating with a dog guide. If it's not safe to travel, these dogs are telling you intelligently no.
Well, that is a wonderful story. And Debbie, how about you? Do you have a good story for us to share about one of the dogs or the people?
It's almost too many to count. I think yes. Debbie was telling me you've been here, what, 21
years? 21
years,
I've been training.
21 yes. years. How fabulous. Yes.
We have one story recently we all like, and Debbie and I know a young chap. We have to give a shout out to Brian. He's been on the cover of our update recently. He is a young fellow we're tremendously proud of. He came to LeaderDog actually to learn our GPS program. We have a device that's a portable GPS device that will tell someone who's blind or visually impaired where they are, much like the device in your car. And this doesn't replace the dog, because the dog is going to tell you, as Debbie mentioned earlier, where the obstacle is, where the pothole is, or the flower pot. But it's going to give you greater information, like there's a Starbucks nearby, or I'm at the corner of Walnut and Avon, give you just that additional tool. So Brian had initially applied to us for that program, initially because he wanted to date and needed to know where he had to go to get girls to go to restaurants and things of that sort. We thought it was a very laudable reason. He just blazed through our program and came back to us last year for a dog guide. He has a wonderful black lab named Armor now, and the two of them are navigating the campus of Western Michigan University. And that's just what we want to see, a young man so smart, just going forth. His life is going to be huge. It's going to be great, and we're so grateful to have been a part of that.
And the dog is helping him date?
I'm sure he is. Dogs have been known to do that.
Oh, my goodness. This is wonderful. Well, you know, pets can bring other pet lovers together. Pets can bring people together and maybe even dating partners together, friends, lovers, whatever, right?
Well, you find that blindness can be very isolating and very segregating. And what a dog guide is going to do is help you bridge that gap. Sometimes a cane can be isolating. People aren't going to talk to you as much. But when you have a dog, the whole world talks to you. So many of our graduates cite the companionship as a wonderful reason to come to LeaderDog. And I'm so proud when I see, I talked to a donor last year who had been in Chicago O'Hare Airport. And he saw six newly minted LeaderDogs helping their students guide their way through O'Hare back on the plane to go to Madrid. And he said he was stopped in his tracks. All of these people navigating O'Hare, busy, crowded, confusing and complicated. And here they are just going and living their lives with these wonderful labs and Goldens and German Shepherds beside them. So it motivated him so much, he came home and gave his wife a Christmas present of a donation to LeaderDog. And I can't think of anything more meaningful to affect lives than that.
Well, I'll tell you what, if a dog can navigate through O'Hare,
yes.
then that gives me confidence to try it again because I have trouble just by myself navigating O'Hare Airport.
Yes,
it's just unbelievable.
And you're talking about little puppies that have been raised perhaps in Royal Oak or Birmingham or Rochester. They're ending up guiding in market towns in northern Chile in circumstances where there's goats and chickens and roosters and complex cities like Rio de Janeiro that are extremely crowded. By supporting LeaderDog, you're supporting lives all over the world and really supporting people who are blind who need this tremendous gift of independence.
Well, I know you've mentioned your volunteer program, but let me ask you this. Is there any opportunity for people to develop a career at your complex or somehow in your organization?
I think being a volunteer at LeaderDog is a wonderful place to start because it really does show you the breadth and scope of our work. The work that Debbie does, as we cited earlier, is a very unique skill. To get to the stage Debbie's at, there's a 3-year apprenticeship, multiple stages in your professional growth to get to that. So we have a 3-year apprenticeship, which is taught at LeaderDogs for the Blind. You can check our website to see when careers do become available at LeaderDog, again at www.leaderdog.org.
Okay, and let's just mention a little bit about your calendar of events. Now, this show, Pet Lovers Lane, we're pre-recording today, but the show will air on April 11th, Saturday at 10 a.m. on WHFR.fm, and you can listen live on the radio, or you can listen on the internet and from anywhere in the world. And after the show is broadcast, you can go to the website, WHFR.fm, and you can podcast the show probably for another 2 months. Let's give people a little bit of calendar of events. Here, spring and summer is coming up, and
yes.
People want to get out of the house in Michigan.
Spring and summer is indeed coming up. On the 10th of every month at LeaderDog, we have a donor breakfast. Come have scrambled eggs with us, meet one of our graduates, and, of course, a highly trained leader dog hero. We love to have people come and see that. So if you're interested in coming, please do contact us at Leader Dogs for the Blind, and you can find out more on our website at leaderdog.org. We also ask the listening public, a great way to support Leader Dog is to host an event for us. If there's something you like to do, whether it's playing euchre or something to do with cars or bake sales, these sorts of events raise tremendous funds for Leader Dog. They're simple and they're easy, and we have a lot of materials that can help you do that. So you can visit our website to find more about hosting an event for Leader Dog. And in November, we have our largest fundraising event of the year. That's Lead in the Holidays. It's a large, silent, and live auction held in Rochester to benefit our programs. So look for our website for more information about that as well.
Okay, so if people come out to your breakfast, which is once a month,
yes,
do they have an opportunity to tour the complex?
Yes, there's an opportunity to tour the complex on that day to really see what we're all about and to meet someone who's benefited from having a dog guide.
Okay, that sounds like a really exciting thing to do, and I hope that I personally have the opportunity to do it. I won't bring any kitty cats with me.
Thank you.
But I've been meaning to get out there, you know, because I did have Pat Paterno on the show several years ago, and he's a great fellow. It's just been on my list of things to do, but I've somehow got to get out there and do it. When you're asking people to host a benefit, are you talking about a small group
small groups, individuals?
Or
absolutely.
What?
You wouldn't believe the kinds of events people plan to benefit Leader Dog. And I know Debbie and I often appear at smaller events like this. For example, people will host a euchre party and the benefits go to Leader Dogs for the Blind. We have people doing sewing circles, things they look at and enjoy themselves personally that they find a way to incorporate a fundraising element for Leader Dog.
And then do you send out somebody to the event?
If we're able to, we try to send a puppy raiser or someone who can bring a dog to actually help the fundraising along.
Exactly.
And that's wonderful for us because it helps us get to the community while we're being very judicious with our funds and saving our funds for people who are blind.
This is very good. Well, I hate to say this, but we've run out of time here on Pet Lovers Lane. We're just having such a great time here talking about Leader Dogs for the Blind with Melissa Weiss, Chief of Philanthropy, and also Debbie Kamandi, the team supervisor and trainer, and also the two wonderful dogs who joined us here today on Pet Lovers Lane. Harbor, who is, he's getting a little bit antsy. I think he's ready to get up and take a little walk and maybe visit the campus of Henry Ford Community College, and also Granger is here. And
he's sleeping.
You know, well, he's having a nap, but he's a retiree. What do you want? So we're very, very thankful that you could join us
Thank you for having us.
Pet Lovers Lane. And we hope all of our listeners will have an opportunity to somehow become involved with the organization, get out to your monthly breakfast, see the fabulous complex that you have there in the city of Rochester, and visit the dogs and the wonderful people that you have, and knowing it's going to help such a wonderful cause throughout the entire world. And I thank you for taking your time to come out here today and joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. To our loyal listeners, stay tuned to Pet Lovers Lane for our calendar for April. And I thank you for staying tuned to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morrell, and we are ready for our April calendar for Pet Lovers Lane. Pet Lovers Lane is a news, information, and talk show about pets, for pet lovers, and for pets. And that means you! April is Prevention of Animal Cruelty Month, and April 26th is National Pet Parents Day. All of you pet lovers, you are pet parents too. And there is a very interesting get-together. It's called All Creatures Universal Life Church, and it's a Bring Your Pets to Church day, and it's actually every Sunday at 1 p.m. And this is Livonia in Livonia at 27911 Five Mile Road, and they also have a Dunkin' Dog Spa there. Contact phone number is 313-563-0162. And also in April, the Friends of Michigan Animals Rescue is holding a Texas Hold'em fundraiser. And this will be this Saturday, April 11th, and also Sunday from 5 p.m. until 2 a.m. And this is in Ann Arbor at the Poker Palace, Belmar Bowling Alley at 3530 Jackson Road. The Midwest Rabbit Rescue is having an Easter benefit. It's called Hops for Hope. And that is also taking place today on April 11th from 1 until 5 p.m. This is in Ypsilanti at the Corner Brewery at 720 Norris Street. And that sounds like a lot of fun for Easter. Really a lot of fun to have an Easter bunny for Easter, wouldn't it? Animal Care Network, one of the organizations we have featured right here on Pet Lovers Lane, is holding a low-cost shot clinic on Saturday, April 18th from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m., and that will be in Pontiac at Center Stage at 536 North Perry Street. And the cost is $10 per animal, and it's even more reasonable if you have three or more animals. It's only $25. And the contact phone number is 248-678-6756. The Michigan No-Kill Shelters and Rescues is holding a Pets and Bats fundraiser, and that will take place Saturday, April 25th from 1 p.m. until midnight, and that will be in West Bloomfield at Bentley's Restaurant at 5586 Drake Road. The daytime activities are free. And if you wish to stay for dinner, the charge for the dinner and a casino ticket is $50. So that sounds like a fun event, too. The Last Chance Rescue is holding a Prance Your Paws Dog Walk, and that will take place Sunday, April 26th, from noon until 4 p.m., and that will be in the city of Heartland at the Walden Woods Family Resort at 2975 Old US 23. The minimum pledge is $30. Contact number is 810-220-9394. The Angels for Animals and Take My Paw Rescue is holding a bowl-a-thon for all of our bowling enthusiasts, and that will take place on Sunday, April 26th from 1 until 4 p.m. There is a noon registration, and that will take place in the City of Commerce at Wonderland Lanes, and that's located at 8265 Richardson Road. The charge will be $15 per bowler. Contact phone number is 248-889-4268. The Michigan Retired Greyhounds as Pets and Other Rescues are holding a show, meet and greet, at the Women's Show. And that will be at the Rock Financial Showplace in Novi, Thursday through Saturday, April 30th through May 2nd, 10 until 8 p.m., and on Sunday, May 3rd, 11 until 5 p.m. The cost is, they have two different costs, $9 and $7, maybe depending on which day you go. You can go to their website at rescuedgreyhounds.org, O-R-G. The Friends of Michigan Animals Rescue is holding the second annual Cinco de Mayo celebration and fundraiser, and that will be in Belleville on Saturday, May 2nd. Let's see, from 5 p.m. until midnight. That will be at the PNA Hall at 454 76 Harris Road. And the cost is $20 per person. The contact number is 734-461-9458. Itsy Bitsy Small Dog Rescue and Paw Print Inn is holding an Adopt a Rescue Dog Day. That's also Saturday, May 2nd from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. in the city of Novi at the Paw Print Inn. And there is no charge. That is a free event. The contact phone number is 248-885-0224. Of course, our very beloved Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter is holding their annual Mutt and Strut for 2009 on Saturday, May 16th at 9 a.m. And that will be on Ford Field in West Dearborn. Pledges are encouraged. You may call the Dearborn Animal Shelter at 313-943-2697. And our final announcement on Pet Lovers Lane is the event called Music for Mutts that is sponsored by the Michigan Humane Society organization, and it's a charity fundraiser, and that will take place Saturday, May 16th at the Royal Oak Music Theater. They're going to have lots of great music with Black Hat Trio, Pillar of Autumn, Friendly Foes, those kinds of groups. All ages is $10, and for VIP ticket, it is $20. The Royal Oak Music Theater is on 4th Street in the city of Royal Oak. You can go to the website Music for Mutts, music and the number 4, mutts.org, or go to the Michigan Humane Society's website, and I'm sure you will find out more information. But that sounds like a really fun event, too. Pet Lovers Lane is a news, information, and talk show about pets for pet lovers and for pets. And we broadcast our show on the second Saturday bi-monthly right here on WHFR at 10 a.m. If you do happen to miss the show, please go to the website at whfr.fm and you can podcast the show, probably catch it anytime after the show is broadcast for maybe up to 2 months. We are glad you could join us here again on WHFR.fm, the only station making waves.